And a very good afternoon to one and all. You're listening to The Global Voice and are very welcome once again to another edition of What's Cooking for June 2012. My goodness, June already. In fact, nearly into July. I can't believe it. You know, it doesn't seem all that long ago at all that I was sitting here talking about winter food and stews and soups and so on, and we're already into June, and as I said, almost into July. My goodness, how time flies. Well, as usual, we have a pretty full programme, so let's get started and ask the question, what's cooking today? For the next couple of months, I thought we would talk about summer food. Now, it's not particularly summery here in the UK at the moment, though today is not so bad. We've had a heck of a lot of rain in past weeks and months. As some of you may know, a drought was officially announced around about sort of April time, but ever since that was announced, all we've had is rain. So not very summery, though we are hoping it will pick up, and you know, you never know, fingers crossed. In fact, if any of you have got any summer weather where you are, please send some our way. We'd love it. So, summer food. And today we're going to talk about summer fruits. Now, when we think of summer fruits, we think of lots of berries, such as raspberries, blackberries, blueberries, red and black currants, loganberries and boysenberries. So, lots of berries there, lots of different flavours and lots of colour. And you can buy frozen summer fruit all year round in your supermarket or grocery store. That is, if you're not lucky enough to be able to grow your own. So we can enjoy our summer fruits all year round. And we'll actually be talking about freezing summer berries a little later in the programme. Of course, one of the most popular desserts for summer berries here in the UK is summer pudding, and this is a delicious dessert and really does bring out the flavour of our summer fruit, and is actually a perfect dessert for the beginner cook. I'm now going to play you a demonstration I recorded last year of someone actually making summer pudding. And at the beginning of the interview, you will hear the presenter say that it is July. Well, don't be fooled, listeners. I know I said that time was flying by, but not that quickly. We are definitely still in June, so you haven't lost a week. Anyway, let's enjoy the recipe.
Now, it is July, although given the weather, you would not think it. But the raspberries are ripening, as are the red currants, and that means only one thing. Use the glut to make the perfect summer pudding. Justine Cantor, the Cordon Bleu chef, will explain how. Lots of fruit, a big loaf of bread, yes. One you made earlier, which I'm looking forward to. What actually constitutes the perfect summer pudding?
Well, in the middle of the pudding are a mixture of currants and berries, which in this case I'm just using red currants and raspberries. But you can add black currants or blackberries. I'm not a favour of adding black currants because they're slightly tough in texture and they're quite aggressive. And I'm sort of sticking with the authentic purist version.
Delia Smith and Nigel Slater use blackberries.
They do, and they do acknowledge that the authentic version is just these two fruits, but you can have fun and play around with fruits that you've grown on your own allotment or whatever's in season. So,
all right, so what are the first steps to take?
So the first steps are I've taken the red currants. The ratio is 4 to 1 of raspberries to red currants. So I've washed them and I've put them in a flat pan. And I'm going to add the raspberries, and I'm just going to heat them very gently. I'm going to bring them to the boil and then let them simmer very gently for about 3 minutes. You don't want to do any longer because you're keen for the red currants to keep their shape, but I want them just to absorb the sugar that I'm going to add and a little bit of water.
Now, when you say, how do you measure a little bit of water?
Well, it is 3 tablespoons. I just happen to have pulled it in because I'm kind of comfortable with that. With the sugar, I wouldn't add 3 tablespoons to begin with because it doesn't give you any leeway. So I'm going to add 2, This really depends on the fruit. You know, we've all eaten raspberries that are fantastically sweet in flavour and others that are a bit tasteless. So I'm going to add 2 to start. And then after about a minute, I'm going to taste it and give myself the chance to add a little bit more. The key with the sugar is that you want it to cut a little bit through the tang of the fruit, but you don't want it to be too sickly. So it's your taste buds that kind of make the decision.
How sharp do you like it? I mean, would you generally be happy with the 2 spoonsful of sugar?
Yes, I don't think I'm going to probably add any more, but we'll see. So that's just going to bubble away now. It's just starting to heat up. Whilst that does, I'm going to move to the bread. So I've got a white sandwich tin loaf here. Surprisingly hard to find with all these speciality breads with ciabatta and sourdough. You must go for... You're basically looking for a kind of canvas of a plain white canvas. You don't want any grains or holes in it because this is going to be the casing that absorbs all of the wonderful fruit.
So and not wholemeal bread?
Not wholemeal bread, no. And actually not even sliced white because that turns into a sort of soggy cloth, which is really disgusting. So this is really...
proper, old-fashioned, high street white bread.
Quite hard to find. I'm now just going to slice it quite thin. It's a mistake to go too thick because what you don't want is a big doughy wadge of bread that meets you on the plate. So I'm just going to cut some slices here. Now, talk about the staleness because what you really want is for it to be a few days old. Now, you don't have to obsess about this. If you haven't got the time to wait, it doesn't matter. I have made it with fresh bread, but the reason it's better is that it's slightly dried up. And it's going to absorb more liquid. And I'm just going to go into the fruit now and just try a little bit. I want all the sugar to dissolve. What I don't want is any grains of sugar to in the finished product.
So how do you avoid the fruit kind of mushing down?
Well, I'm not going... The raspberries will mush down a little bit and the currants will actually keep... it's not going to be here for very long. But what I would suggest is don't give it a good stir because you will disturb it. I'm just going to try a bit. See, I think to my taste that's perfect. So I'm just going to give it a little bit of a shake and give it one more minute and then that will be fine. So back to the bread. I'm going to take the crusts off. And what you need to do is to reserve one slice, which is going to be the bottom of the pudding. And then the others I'm just going to cut into rectangles.
And you've got a big white... pudding basin there. That is just a
ceramic standard pudding basin. You don't need to have special kit for this. You can use a pudding bowl that you've got at home. You just need a bit of height. So the first slice, I'm just going to take the bottom of the ceramic bowl and place it on top, and then just with a little knife I'm just going to cut round. This is going to be the bottom of the bowl, which of course in the end is going to be the top, and that's what the eye will see. So you want that to be in one piece.
You want it to look neat.
Neat. Although, I have to say, when I teach summer pudding to people, I do reassure them that this isn't like baking. It's not absolutely exact. The bread is going to merge and come together. So, actually, you've got a bit of leeway. You can...
Have you buttered that bowl?
No. Don't want any fat.
Oh.
Because you're
how,
looking...
How easily does it turn out, then, if you haven't buttered
well,
the bowl?
Well, we're going to see in a minute.
And okay.
Then, luckily, this is radio, so if it goes horribly wrong, Jenny, I'm hoping that you're going to be
splat,
on my side.
I won't mention it.
Now, what I do, it's a trick that I've picked up, is that most recipes just say bung that into the bowl, the piece of bread. I'm going to dunk it, not burning myself, because that sort of acts as a bit of glue, and then it's... sucks down onto the bottom of the bowl. And I'm going to do that with each slice as I go. So we've got our bottom, our circular disc at the bottom, and now I'm going to just dunk each piece of bread into the beautiful coloured juices, and I'm just going to lay it and create a lining. The most important thing is that there aren't any holes, so the fruit can't escape. So you can have a go. I mean, this is real Blue Peter time now. We can have a go at sort of playing at mosaics. So when there's a little triangle of a hole, we just cut a bit of bread, give it a dunk, and squish it in so that we end up with a perfect circle.
So whilst you do that, what do we know about the origin of the summer pudding?
Well, it's a bit intriguing. When I started looking into this, and I went online and found various versions, but there was no evidence to suggest that any of the stories of its origins were actually true. There's one story that says it dates back to the 18th century, and it would have been a kind of cleansing medicinal dish, an alternative to butter-rich pastry, and they would have served it at spas. But there was no, you'd expect there to be some kind of recipe that you could look up and see how it was made, and there wasn't, and I thought that was a bit odd. Another version is it actually dates back to Victorian England, and it would have been a summer version of a sort of lighter suet pudding alternative. But again, nothing in print. So I popped into the London Library yesterday and had a look round. And what I came across, which makes perfect sense, is that actually it appeared in a recipe in the 1920s, post-war, when farmers would have had a huge amount of summer fruit that they needed to use up. And this was a very cheap, simple, doesn't really need much cooking. And it was a way of using that fruit up. And also, what better way than to case it in cheap white bread? And then they would have served their family. So it wasn't a dish that was served at the high table that people would have written about, which is why we can't find it.
It's a classic make-do and mend.
It is. It's a rural
food,
farmer's
it?
Sort of poor person's dish. And that, I think, I sort of felt like I'd made a bit of a breakthrough yesterday. That's the reason why nobody can find it.
But why would they have thought it would be a favourite of health spas in the 19th century? Why would it have been considered health-giving?
Well, it isn't. I mean, you've got some fantastic fresh fruit. I've put a little bit of sugar in and a bit of bread. It is much better for you than anything that would involve butter. I mean, I'm going to serve it to you with a bit of cream. You may, of course, reject the cream.
I doubt it.
You doubt it. Okay. Anyway, so there we are. I've done a sort of mosaic of bread. So now comes the moment where we pour the juices. And some people say it's better to pour it in hot. It absorbs better. And I think I agree with that. So I'm just going to... I'm not going to pour it because the pan's quite heavy. I'm going to spoon it in. And I'm going right up to the top. And I want as much juice as possible.
So you don't put layers of bread in between?
Well,
some
no,
people
one
do,
of,
don't they?
Some people do. And in fact, I'm glad you reminded me of that. In the recipe from the 20s, they did do that. And in fact, I think Elizabeth David did that. She wrote about it in the 50s. So I'm not going to do... I think enough bread, actually. I'd rather celebrate.
So just
the
bread on the outside, yeah, and the bottom, yeah, and then presumably you put,
yeah,
some on the,
exactly,
top.
Yeah.
How successful is it at other times of year if you've frozen the raspberries and the red currants?
You can freeze fruit. Fruit does survive. I quite like this. I mean, for me, this is one of the only dishes I can think of that is really, truly seasonal, because even though asparagus has its months... we all sometimes fall prey to buying them when we shouldn't. And actually, in the shops, you can't buy red currants or raspberries unless it's July or August. So that I quite like that.
Right,
you can freeze your fruit.
We've got that one going.
Right.
Let's chip out the one.
Right. Are you on my
that
side
you made
here?
Earlier.
If this doesn't
I'm
work.
Totally on your side.
Good, okay.
Quick
the joy
knife
of radio.
Around the.
So I'm taking a flat
edges.
Knife, not a serrated knife, round the sides. All the way, and I'm not worried if it doesn't come out the first time. I will go back in. I'm taking a pretty presentation plate, turning it upside down, holding on, and I'm hoping that I will hear a thud. But as I say, it's happened to me before. I just turn it back over. Let's have a look.
Come on, out you come. Hurry up.
There we are. Hang on a minute.
One more. Quick, go with
one
the knife.
You can probably hear the... There
oh, and
are.
There it goes. Absolutely perfect.
And then it's like a cake,
beautiful
really.
Colour.
You cut it as a slice.
Go on, cut me a bit.
Cut you a piece.
Quick.
It's the right time of day for a piece of summer pudding. And it does come out beautifully.
Oh, that looks fantastic.
Would you like a drizzle of cream?
Just put a drizzle on.
Nobody will know.
I get to eat all the things I'm not supposed to eat on Woman's Out. Wonderful. Oh, that looks really fantastic. And the fruit looks perfect. And I'll have a quick taste. That is really good.
Excellent.
How long should you leave it in the fridge?
Well, I, by mistake, made one 2 weeks ago and I totally forgot about it. Genuine story. 4 days later, some people came round. I found it, and it was the best summer pudding I think I've ever tasted. So my advice would be 3 days or 4 days. And I mean, it'll last a week. Nothing can happen to it, so...
That wasn't the two-week-old one, was it? Justine Cantor, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Yes, and I doubt I would have foregone the cream either, I have to say. So there we are, summer pudding. Not the easiest of recipes to follow from that demonstration, I don't think. But interesting nevertheless. I must admit I found the little bit of history about summer pudding very interesting, because I wasn't able to find anything when I was researching for the programme. So I was pleased to play this and remember that there was a little bit of history there. But yes, as I say, not the easiest of recipes to follow. But fear not. Summer pudding really isn't as difficult to make as you may think, or as that recipe may have led you to believe. Here I have a recipe for quick summer pudding, which I'm going to share with you now. And
this is what you do.
For this recipe, you will need 300 grams or 10.5 ounces mixed frozen fruits, defrosted. One large punnet of strawberries, tops removed, and strawberries halved if large. Four whole fruits reserved for garnish. 5 tablespoons of caster sugar. 5 grams of fresh basil, chopped. 10 slices of good white bread, crusts removed. 1 jar of raspberry sauce. And for the garnish, 4 whole strawberries, 4 sprigs of mint, and icing sugar. You'll actually need only 6 slices of bread if you're making just one large pudding. And what you do is, 1. Lightly oil 4 teacups or 1 large bowl, about 1.5 litres or 2 pints in size, and line with cling film. 2. Mix together the defrosted fruits, fresh strawberries, basil and sugar. 3. Pour half of the raspberry sauce into a shallow dish. 4. Cut the bread to form a small circle for the bottom, slices for the sides, and a larger circle for the top. To line the mould, dip one side of the bread in the sauce and place in the mould dipped side against the mould. Make sure the pieces of bread overlap to securely encase the filling. 5. Fill the centre with the fruit mixture and press down well. Top with the last slice of bread. 6. Remove the pudding from the mould and place on a plate. Pour over the remainder of the sauce and garnish with the fresh strawberries and sprigs of mint. Dust with icing sugar and serve. As I mentioned earlier in the programme, I'm going to talk a little bit now about freezing summer fruit. And if you're lucky enough to have a glut of homegrown fruit, or if you just want to enjoy the taste of summer all year round, then freezing makes a lot of sense. There are unfortunately those fruits that don't take too well to freezing, those with a particularly high water content, such as strawberries, plums, melons and bananas, would you believe? Yes, indeed. These fruits don't take too well to freezing, and also peaches, although you can make a lovely peach crumble from frozen peaches. Choose good, firm, high quality ripe fruit for freezing, and we've talked before on What's Cooking about how to choose your fruit and to tell if it's firm or good fruit. And the way to do this is to just give it a little squeeze. This is by far the best way if you can't see what you're buying. And also, I think if you can, I mean, looks can be deceiving. So give the fruit on display a little bit of a squeeze. Now, be very careful because obviously it contains lots of juice and you don't want to be spraying the rest of the shoppers with fruit juice. Just give it a little squeeze, and this will give you an idea of the firmness, the texture, and just give you some idea of what the fruit is like and whether you want to buy it. Wash your hands thoroughly and make sure that any utensils you're using, such as knives, chopping boards, etc., are absolutely clean too. Wash your fruit in several changes of cold water, but do be careful not to let it soak. I always find it best to freeze fruit in small portions, and freezer bags or containers obviously are very good for this. If you're using freezer bags, do make sure to force any air out before sealing the bags. The best way to freeze summer berries is to open freeze them. Spread the berries out on a non-stick tray or any tray lined with greaseproof paper and pop them in the freezer for a couple of hours. The most effective way to prevent your fruit from darkening and losing flavour is to use ascorbic acid or vitamin C, which you can buy quite readily from your chemist or drugstore. You can sprinkle your fruit with this and mix well, or you can dissolve this in water. Or if you're using a sugar syrup to freeze your fruit, you can add the vitamin C to this. Apples in particular go brown very quickly when exposed to air. So if you're preparing apples for the freezer, it might be a good idea to drop the slices into lemon juice as you go, so that they don't go brown while you're still chopping. Apples will also need blanching, 2 minutes in boiling water before freezing. Another common problem is freezer burn, and this happens when moisture is lost from the fruit inside the freezer. It's easily avoidable though, just use heavy-duty freezer bags or containers. So there we are, just a few hints and tips on freezing fruit for you. I hope you've found them useful and that they'll help you to enjoy the fresh taste of summer all year round. Now for some of the more unusual types of fruit that are grown around the world. Perhaps some of the more weird and wacky fruits. You may know some of these. I know some of them. I've actually tasted some of them. But they're really quite interesting. So, first up, we have the cherimoya, or custard apple. Now, this is a heart-shaped fruit native to South America. And whilst it may be rough and bumpy on the outside, the inside flesh is smooth and creamy like custard. And that is absolutely true. It is delicious. I have eaten a custard apple. I was a little bit sceptical at first, as I usually am with new fruits and vegetables. But they are absolutely delicious. So if you ever get the chance to try one, give it a go. Next, we have the Kiwano melon, or African horned melon, and this is a spiny fruit with a bright orange skin and a green and yellow pulp inside. Apparently has a sweet but tart flavour, tasting something like a banana, lime and cucumber mix. Is native to southern Africa, but they're also grown now in New Zealand and parts of California. Next up, we have Buddha's hand, also called fingered citron. This is juiceless and seedless and gets its name from the long, slender segments that resemble fingers, surprisingly. In Chinese and Japanese homes, this fruit is mainly used to perfume the home and clothing, whilst in Western countries it's mainly used for its zest. Pawpaw is the largest edible fruit in America. It grows on a deciduous tree ranging from 12 to 20 feet tall. The fruit can range from a weight of 5 to 16 ounces and can grow up to 6 inches in diameter. The larger versions can become very plump, similar to a mango. A ripe pawpaw has a thin skin and becomes soft. I've only ever bought a pawpaw once and never ever again. I was going to make a nice fruit salad and decided that as something a little different we'd have pawpaw. So got it home, cut it open, absolutely chock full of seeds, and it tastes disgusting. Doesn't smell too bad, but it tastes absolutely disgusting. There are several things I could liken it to, none of which I will mention here. Next, we have durian. This is a Southeast Asian fruit, which has a thorny husk and carries a distinct odour when opened up. Durian fruit can grow up to 12 inches long and up to 6 inches in diameter. The colour of the husk ranges from green to brown, with the flesh being either red or pale yellow, depending on the species. The odour of the fruit when opened up is apparently so strong that it has led to the fruit being banished in some places and hotels in Southeast Asia. Apparently used mostly to flavour sweets and puddings in Southeast Asia. I must admit, the durian fruit does interest me slightly. Because of its bad smell, I tend to just think I don't want to know. But I've heard that it tastes delicious. In fact, one saying I've heard is, smells like hell, tastes like heaven. And I find that so difficult to believe. I cannot conceive of something smelling so bad, but tasting so wonderful. But if you've ever tasted durian fruit, then get in touch and let me know what you thought of it. Or if you have any more weird and wacky fruits and vegetables from around the world that you want to tell us about, please do. If you'd like to contact the programme with contributions, questions, feedback, or perhaps you have ideas for subjects you'd like covered in future shows, you can do so in the usual way by emailing cooking@theglobalvoice.info. That's COOKIN at theglobalvoice.info. And I said at the beginning of this programme that we were going to have a couple of months of the summer theme. And next month I'm going to be talking about summer parties, picnics and barbecues, etc. So if you have anything you'd like to contribute to next month's show, please get in touch. I'd love to hear from you. To download or to listen to this show again, go to theglobalvoice.info/gallery, where you can also find archives of all What's Cooking shows. You can also visit incx.org/whatscooking, where you can download our podcast and or browse through our recipe pages. Well, time has most definitely flown by once again, so until I'm back with you next month, this is Sue Hadfield saying, look after yourselves and each other, and as always, happy cooking!